From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
The November 3rd election is just a little more than 2 weeks away, and as usual, the question is, what about Florida?
I would never tell anyone to rest based on the polls.
Also this week, voter accessibility advocates want Florida elections officials to consider making digital voting a reality.
Because it would be a game changer for many types of voters.
We'll also hear about a new type of so far legal hemp that can get people as high as illegal marijuana. And we'll discover that Northwest Florida's world-famous Tupelo honey may become ever scarcer as drought parches the trees from which it's derived. I'm Tom Flanagan. This is Capitol Report. The focus has been on Florida this week in the presidential race, which is drawing ever tighter as Election Day draws closer. Ryan Daly has more on how the race is likely to be a fight to the finish in the perennial battleground state.
President Donald Trump, in his bid to win re-election, has seemingly been hyper-focused on the Sunshine State. At the top of the week, he held his first rally since being diagnosed with COVID-19 in Sanford, Florida.
But it was Florida's best year. The year coming is going to be, and you're going to see a great third quarter set of numbers coming out very soon, just before the election. So I'm putting myself on the spot.
Trump told his crowd of supporters his administration is the key to rebounding from the tailspin coronavirus sent the economy into nationally. He localized his message to Central Florida, speaking just outside Orlando.
And the Florida tourism and hospitality industries that I know so well will reach historic new highs.
Despite criticisms about holding a rally amid debate about whether the president was still contagious, Trump has kept up the pressure. He addressed the Economic Club of Florida during a virtual event held with various other clubs around the country. The president reiterated his messaging on an economic rebound.
The choice facing America is simple. It's the choice between historic prosperity under my pro-American policies or very crippling poverty and a steep depression under the radical left. And that's what you'll have, is a depression.
In Florida, the president has had his eye on two key groups of voters.
And I want to thank the Hispanic Americans down in Florida. You have been so incredible to Trump. Biden's agenda would be a catastrophe for Florida seniors.
His handling of this pandemic has been erratic, just like his presidency has been. And it has prevented Florida seniors and people all across the country from getting the relief that they need.
Trump's challenger, Democratic nominee Joe Biden, took to the deep blue bastion of Broward County in South Florida to woo voters. Biden hammered away at the message that Trump doesn't care about seniors, the former vice president asserted, as evidenced by his handling of COVID-19.
People say he's not willing to do the work. Well, I don't think he cares much about it. While you're losing precious time with your loved ones, he's been stuck in a sand trap in one of his golf courses.
Democratic Congressman Ted Deutch, whose district includes Broward, says Biden's messaging resonates with seniors in his constituency.
He mocks seniors in his political ads, like he did the other day with a meme that went around. And they're angry, and they've turned on him, and it's absolutely understandable why.
Deutch and other Democrats see Trump as a threat to Social Security and Medicare, which is reflected in Biden's campaign messaging. But Deutch maintains Biden's biggest point of emphasis should be ripping Trump on his COVID-19 response.
Start with the biggest problem that President Trump faces, which is utter mismanagement of a pandemic that has led, in Florida's case, to the deaths of well over 15,000 people.
A voter registration gap favoring Democrats has tightened over the last several major elections, and for November, it has narrowed to less than 150,000. That's less than half the advantage in registration Democrats had in 2016. Deutch says registrations aren't the only indicator to watch in a race, and instead says to look at the whole picture.
If you look at the general election turnout, more Democrats have voted so far. If you look at new voters, you see that Democratic participation is up by over 2-1. So I think you need to look at this election and who's actually voting.
Despite the narrowing gap, Florida-centric polls have Biden unanimously holding a lead, albeit in a close race that will no doubt be a fight to the finish. Deutsch says Democratic voters can't get complacent.
Look, Florida's going to be close. It's always close. So I don't tell anyone. I would never tell anyone to rest based on the polls.
The back half of this week brought two competing town hall events on major television networks held in lieu of an actual in-person debate. Trump's was held in Miami, where he took questions from Florida voters. Biden's in Pennsylvania, following a similar format with a longer runtime. Trump is holding another Florida rally in Ocala Friday, and Dr. Jill Biden is stumping for her husband in St. Petersburg. I'm Ryan Daly.
Voting integrity advocates often push against casting ballots over the internet, but disability rights advocates counter that method is more accessible than current options. Robbie Gaffney spoke with experts about the pros and cons of digital voting.
Voters with disabilities can face many challenges when casting their ballots at the polls. For those with limited mobility, physical obstacles can block their path, and for those who need an accessible voting machine, poll workers may not know how to set that up. Michelle Bishop with the group National Disability Rights Network says there's an obvious solution: digital ballot return.
Because it would be a game changer for many types of voters. It would be a lot more accessible for people with certain types of disabilities, but also just your average voter, if they could just at any point, you know, pick up whatever device they have at home or go to a kiosk that's secured but out somewhere publicly and be able to cast that vote. I think it would be a game changer. I think it could help our turnout numbers.
Long lines at the polls and lack of transportation are problems many voters face and could avoid if they cast their ballots online. But Verified Voting's Florida Director Dan McCray says that method isn't safe.
It's extremely hard to account for those ballots, to properly secure those ballots, to ensure that they haven't been manipulated.
Part of the problem, McCray says, is that the internet doesn't have the framework to make digital voting secure. MIT computer science PhD student Michael A. Spector researches cryptography and computer security. He spent the last few years looking into election security.
So it turns out that electronic return has been an open problem, meaning an unsolved problem in computer security for, I want to say, like the 80s, right? We've been studying this. It's been a motivation for cryptography research, and we just still haven't gotten to the point where we know how to do this well.
Spector says that's because there are many things that can go wrong when it comes to digital voting. For instance, malware can be on a voter's computer.
Yeah, so it turns out that if you get a piece of malware on your computer, it's kind of like you're in the Matrix, right? It completely controls everything that you see and do. So if you were to, say, vote for candidate A, your computer could say, congrats, you officially voted for candidate A, but really it cast your ballot for B.
Spector says internet service providers or whoever owns a voter's Wi-Fi can also interfere.
Let's say I'm a bad guy and I know that, and I somehow have control over your network. And I know that you generally are living in a neighborhood that votes primarily in one direction. On the day of the election, I could just shut off your internet cause the service to be delayed or degraded in such a way that you just don't want to vote.
Bishop and McCray came together recently to discuss how accessibility and security issues can be resolved. They agreed digital voting should be studied more before completely throwing it out. In the meantime, McCray says systems need to be designed with security and accessibility in mind.
They're not mutually exclusive at all, and they're certainly not mutually exclusive with today's technologies.
He points to an app Los Angeles County developed that allows voters to mark sample ballots on their phone, come to the polls, scan a QR code, review their ballot, then print it out and turn it in. The machine used to print the ballot is also accessible to those with disabilities.
And the result is the VCAP system in California is emerging as a real model for how voting system design can be done and to solve for all of these. For this wide variety of things it needs to solve for.
The conversation on digital voting and how to make it secure will likely continue for years to come. I'm Robbie Gaffney.
Florida's unemployment rate ticked up in September as the state's hospitality and tourism industries continued to face long-term struggles amid the coronavirus pandemic. However, high rates of pandemic-driven job losses are now projected to translate into extra weeks of unemployment benefits for Floridians next year. Florida elections officials this week told local supervisors of elections that convicted felons with outstanding court-ordered debts will be included in lists of flagged voters who should potentially be removed from the voting rolls. The move came more than a year after the passage of a controversial state law requiring felons to pay legal financial obligations, in other words, fines, fees, costs, and restitution associated with their convictions in order to be eligible to vote. Florida Power and Light has asked state regulators to approve a proposal that would offer bill credits to certain small businesses amid the COVID-19 pandemic. The proposal, filed this week at the State Public Service Commission, would provide 10% credits on energy charges and could take effect in December. A state appeals court today rejected arguments that Tampa Electric Company should be shielded from lawsuits stemming from injuries suffered by two men during a 2017 accident at the utility's Big Bend Power Station, that's located in Hillsborough County. Still to come on Capitol Report, how can you assure the safety of the Florida legislature as it soon starts meeting in the midst of the pandemic?
There are members who are looking for the for those protocols to come out to make sure them and their families are safe when we come up in the next few weeks.
Hemp is okay. Psychoactive marijuana is still illegal on the federal level, but now there's a version of legal hemp that produces a potentially illegal high.
Delta 8, on the other hand, is very quick in and quick out, an effect that lasts anywhere from 30 minutes.
And the legendary Tupelo honey produced in the state's remote panhandle region is facing a dry spell.
The river stays on 1 foot, 2 foot, and it should be 9 foot. So that makes sense that the small trees are not being able to grow.
In about a month from now, all 160 members of the Florida legislature are scheduled to return to Tallahassee, despite predictions that the COVID-19 pandemic could be worse than it is now. Steve Bosquet has this report on how lawmakers feel about coming back to the Capitol.
It's a Florida tradition. 2 weeks after the November 3rd election, lawmakers will return for a one-day ceremonial gathering. A new speaker and Senate president will take charge. Dozens of newly elected legislators will take the oath of office, and the legislature will adopt rules to guide it for the next 2 years. Lawmakers believe they have to take those steps in person, not remotely. Republican Senator Wilton Simpson, the likely new Senate president, said there will be restrictions on public access to the Capitol and limits on how many people can be in the Senate chamber.
We're going to drastically limit the number of people on the floor so that we can honor a 6 foot social distancing effort. I believe everyone will have masks on. You know, we're going to try to do this in a very safe fashion.
Simpson said all senators will be offered COVID-19 tests on Monday, the day before the session on November 17th. Friends and family will watch the proceedings on closed circuit TV in a Senate committee room.
Under those protocols, I think I would feel very comfortable coming back.
Republican Senator Aaron Bean of Fernandina Beach was first elected to the House 20 years ago. He has no hesitation about returning.
I'm sure that protocols involve distancing and masks, separating people.
Bean said he's reassured by the fact that legislative leaders are taking extra safety precautions. The Senate signed a 2-year contract with Tampa General Hospital for an infection control plan. Hospital experts are scrutinizing the Capitol's air conditioning and heating systems, elevators, and hallways. At least 4 legislators have tested positive for the COVID-19 virus. Republican Senator Ben Albritton and House members Randy Fine, Chris Latvala, and Chevron Jones. Jones is a House member who will be sworn in as a Democratic senator. He was hospitalized in early July with the virus.
I'm happy that the precautions are being made, and I'm hoping that they make them public sooner than later, because I know for a fact that there are members who are looking for the for those protocols to come out to make sure them and their families are safe when we come up in the next few weeks.
The last time lawmakers assembled in Tallahassee was March 19th, when they returned for a one-day session to pass a budget. By then, there were many ominous warnings of widespread shutdowns, mass hospitalizations, and deaths. Legislative leaders would not even shake hands afterward. One lawmaker, Representative Evan Jenny of Dania Beach, called that gathering, quote, "the damn stupidest thing I've ever heard." But Jenny said legislators have no choice but to meet in person.
But I am not sure that we have any other option. The way everything is written, as I understand it, but as it stands, we don't have a virtual way of doing this. So hesitant, yes. Will I? I have to.
The one-day organizational session is typically attended by hundreds of family members, friends, and business associates, as well as many staff members, lobbyists, and news media. Senator Perry Thurston of Plantation favors restrictions on the number of people who can enter the Capitol.
I empathize with individuals who have loved ones at home and have to come back to them who have some special needs or conditions. I do think that we as an organization should mandate certain precautions. If we're going to come, we should mandate certain precautions be followed. Limiting the number of people who can come in, who can be in the Capitol, and requiring everyone to have masks and whatever other PPE should be recommended.
Simpson said he's not aware of any legal requirement for in-person attendance at an organizational session. He said doing it the same way as before is, quote, the more respectful way. I'm Steve Bosquet.
When Congress passed the 2018 Farm Bill, it cleared the way for hemp to be grown across the United States. Hemp comes from the cannabis plant, which is mostly known for its ability to produce marijuana, which remains illegal. The difference between the two is simple. One gets you high, the other doesn't. However, some store owners have recently started selling a version of hemp that produces a similar effect as marijuana, effectively blurring the lines. Blaise Gainey reports the Federal Drug Enforcement Administration has attempted to ban the new product, but that's not deterred business owners who are now exploiting a legal loophole.
The definition of marijuana is cannabis that is above 0.3 Delta 9 THC plus THCA times 0.877. Delta 8, on the other hand, is not mentioned anywhere regarding marijuana in any situation or context.
Alex Petrick has come up with what he sees as a unique marketing opportunity. The hemp distributor is out with a new product, Delta 8 THC. All those letters he just mentioned is how the federal government defines what constitutes marijuana. Federal law says marijuana is anything above 0.3 Delta 9 and therefore illegal. Petrick's new product is Delta 8, and he says the two deltas are not the same.
If I use a Delta 9 THC product from a medical marijuana treatment center, it creates a euphoric high that can last anywhere from 2 to 4 hours. Delta 8, on the other hand, is very quick in and quick out. It's an effect that lasts anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour and a half.
The product is so similar to marijuana, the Federal Drug Enforcement Agency tried to ban it in August. The agency argues it's a synthetic drug, and synthetic drugs are also illegal. But the attempt to ban the high-inducing CBD has run into headwinds. For one, the DEA is trying to ban it by rule, not by law, and that new rule is being challenged by the Hemp Industries Association. Board member Tim Gordon is the scientific officer for a CBD and hemp company, and he says Delta 8 is in no way synthetic.
So it's a present for a little bit in the plant, but how guys are doing it, like out in California, some folks out here, they're using, you know, a CBD
concentrate and using that to convert into a delta-8 THC molecule.
He says there's nothing natural about synthetic drugs.
Hence some of those crazy reactions we have read about in regards to using spice and those kind of things. I would highly recommend everybody not to touch that stuff.
Gordon believes the rule by the DEA will be overturned in court since the Farm Bill legalized all parts of the hemp plant.
They would have to amend the Controlled Substances Act to include Delta 8 specifically, and I can't see them doing that. And number two, just like you mentioned, you know, we legalized hemp and all the cannabinoids present in hemp. So, you know, Delta 8 happens to be one of them.
The product is so new, several law enforcement agencies contacted by WFSU, including the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, were not aware of it. Florida Attorney General Ashley Moody's office says it's reviewing the DEA's action. State Agricultural Commissioner Nikki Freed, who oversees Florida's hemp program, says Delta-8 THC is likely here to stay.
As long as they're following the rules regarding the Delta-9 and that it collectively doesn't get us over the threshold of the 0.3, then you know we are not taking it off the market.
I'm Blaze Ganey.
Florida is well known for its environmental treasures of beaches, lakes, parks, rivers, and others, with some receiving national protection. Representative Vern Buchanan was seeking a special designation for a water body in his district. Earlier this week, he introduced legislation that would establish a federal designation for the Little Manatee River as a wild and scenic river. If approved, the water body would become part of the National Park System's Wild and Scenic River Program. The Little Manatee River, which Buchanan describes as one of the most pristine blackwater rivers in the state, begins in southeastern Hillsborough County and flows downstream into Tampa Bay and through Little Manatee River State Park. If it receives the designation, the river will join the Loxahatchee River and the Wekiva River as the only rivers in Florida currently recognized under the federal program. It's also recognized at the state level as an outstanding Florida water and is one of the most pristine blackwater rivers in the state. A federal appeals court this week revived a lawsuit filed by a former NFL and University of Florida football player who's seeking disability benefits because of injuries suffered on the field. A three-judge panel of the 11th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ordered a district judge to reconsider the case in which Darren Mickle, who played 9 years in the NFL after leaving the University of Florida in the early 1990s, is seeking total and permanent disability benefits under an NFL player's retirement plan. You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, the Apalachicola Bay is well known for its oysters. But over the years, as population, agriculture, and management practices have led to less water flowing down the river that feeds the bay, the industry has started to collapse. What some might not realize is oysters aren't the only industry depending on that water. Regan McCarthy reports the trees that make Florida's famous Tupelo honey also need water flowing through the Apalachicola River to survive.
Apalachicola is 106.5 miles long. That's from right where Jim Woodruff Dam is to the Gulf of Mexico.
Dan Tonsmeyer recently retired from his long-held post as Apalachicola Riverkeeper. He's given the reins over to the new riverkeeper, Georgia Ackerman. But throughout the handoff, Tonsmeyer has worked to teach Ackerman the ins and outs of the river. That's what he's doing on this day, while WFSU reporter Rob Diaz de Villegas tags along.
So an area like this, the way I get it, this is an older tree, and you can see it's breaking down, falling down. So the older trees are dying out, but there's no real young tupelo coming in. So the hardwoods can come in if it stays dry long enough, but then when the flood comes through, it kills them. The floodplain forest is thinning out.
Tonsmeyer and Ackerman are making their way through what he calls a quintessential tupelo swamp. It's one of the many along the edges of the river. The ground is made up of mushy muck. It's an area that would typically flood as the level of the Apalachicola River rises.
Hello there. How are
y'all? There it is.
Good, thank you.
That says it all.
Glynis and Ben Lanier run a Tupelo honey business in Wewahitchka, between the Apalachicola and Chipola Rivers. Their family has been harvesting Tupelo honey in what Ben calls the Apalachicola River swamps since 1898. The family has become well known for its honey and even helped consult for a movie about beekeeping, Yulee's Gold, filmed back in 1997. On this day, I'm lucky enough to get a taste.
I'm proud of this. See how thick it is?
Yeah.
It will stick to the roof of your mouth. It'll run my sugar up. I got type 2 diabetes.
You're right. It's a lot lighter than the honey I usually see.
Well, it drips off of it. It costs too much to waste. It's different. It's different from anything you ever put in your mouth, I bet you.
The Lanier's make their honey, what some call liquid gold, by taking their bees out into the swampland their family owns while the Tupelo trees are blooming.
I'm telling you, the majority of these trees that really produce are hundreds of years old. And they're right out in the bog. I mean, right out in the swamp.
But the trees depend on water flowing into the floodplains to thrive. Glynis says the river hasn't been as high as it used to be.
And the river level stands so low, and the Tupelo tree needs all that water. Yeah. And, you know, the river stays on 1 foot, 2 foot, and it should be 9 foot. So that makes sense that the small trees are not being able to grow.
Lower river levels mean less water flowing into the floodplain. That makes it harder for young Tupelo trees to grow and can contribute to the collapse of older trees. Researchers have found decreased water flow has led to a significant decrease in Tupelo trees in the area. And those trees are the key to making Florida's famous Tupelo honey.
But they're just naturally hollow. A lot of them are. And they're big around as this kitchen table we're sitting at, and hollow. And I'm caretaker of 500 or 600 acres of them we own, wetland. And people used to make fun of, you know, I have some Florida swamp land I'll sell you. Well, I actually, as long as I pay the taxes on it, the deed says U.S. government lot number so-and-so, so I don't think it's mine, but I've paid the taxes on it for over 100 years, me and my daddy and my granddaddy. And I appreciate it. You know, I appreciate the swamp. I don't want to do anything to harm it.
Water flow isn't the only thing that's making the Tupelo honey business a little tougher than it used to be. Competition from out-of-state beekeepers coming into the area means more bees competing for the same flowers. Hurricane Michael also created complications by damaging some of the trees, something Glynis says the trees are still suffering from, judging by their shorter blooming season this year. And now there's the impacts of the coronavirus. In her most recent online update, Glynis says the family's now offering drive-up services in an effort to keep sales up. She hopes to keep the business going long enough for Ben to teach their now 16-year-old son all he knows about beekeeping. I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Daly, Robbie Gaffney, Blaze Ganey, Lynn Hatter, Gina Jordan, and Regan McCarthy. Thanks also to Steve Bosquet. Technical assistance for Capitol Report comes from Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Please join us again next week for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee.